Welcome finally to CS 520 Intelligent Systems. I'd like to start by going over the syllabus, which you see here and you should all have copies of. After that, I will go over some other aspects of the course. I'll talk a little bit about the schedule. I have a copy of that. I won't hand it around because you can get copies of the schedule yourself. And then we'll talk about a few other random odds and ends. One of the things that we will talk about on Thursday is what exactly do we mean by intelligent systems? What, when we say a system is intelligent, what does that mean? But for now, I will just assume that we know what that means. I mean, we probably all have some idea of what it means to be an intelligent system, so I'll let that slide. And I'll just point out that I'm going to teach this course as a data structures and algorithms course. And I'll talk a little bit more about what that means later on when we talk about the objectives, and we'll also, again, go into more detail probably next week what I mean by that. The other alternative, and I suspect this is more in line with the way the other section of this class is being taught, is that it sort of represents an introduction to artificial intelligence. Okay, well, I'm not an AI person, so I'm not going to take that point of view. I'm essentially going to treat this as a data structures and algorithms course. Now, the motivation here, as you'll see in a minute, will be data structures and algorithms that make programs behave intelligently for some interpretation of intelligence that we'll talk about in the next lecture. But essentially, I'm going to take a less AI point of view about things and a more sort of mechanical point of view in terms of the way that we're going to go through the course and the material in the course. So this is essentially a course that's going to be interested in the data structures and algorithms that are used to give computer programs intelligence. We'll talk about that again in the next lecture. The topics that we're going to look at, the techniques that we're going to be involving ourselves with, there are lots of them. I took a subset of them. We're going to be looking at search, representations and reasoning, right, which is sort of what you might think an intelligent system would do, and machine learning. Okay. The prerequisites for this course are mathematical foundations in computer science, which is 502, discrete structures, and data structures and algorithms, 305. These are, I assume that everyone in this class has the prereqs, because I've been rejecting people who don't have the prereqs. And this is important. We are going to be pounding on these things all semester. Okay, so you might want to get your 502 book. And you might want to get your 503 book. Have them available. The course itself is divided into 7 2-week sections. That's not quite true. There is a section that straddles spring break. That will be 3 weeks long. But for the most part, it's 7 2-week sections, including this first section, which is the introductory section. Class meets on Tuesdays in here, so you all know how to get here, and on Thursdays in 209. All right, so we have split meeting times. Class meets normally at 7:25 to 9:15, and I apologize for the mistakes, the screw-ups that happened today. On both days. So we're still meeting at the same time, it's just different rooms. Now, if you look at this at some web browser that actually handles JavaScript correctly, you'll see a nice calendar, and in fact, you should see pictures of the calendar in your in the handouts I gave you. But this important dates for the semester in general, this is the first day of class. The last day of class is the 30th of April on Thursday. The 30th of March, which is pretty much the end of March, is the last day to withdraw from this class with a W. And then finally, spring break is 2 weeks before that, I believe, on the 17th and 19th. So we'll have a week off that that week in March. And as I said, in the second half of this lecture, I'll go over the schedule fairly quickly just to show you what the schedule looks like for the semester. Again, this course's main objective is to understand intelligent program behavior. All right? And we are going to do that ourselves by looking at techniques that are used by programs to exhibit intelligent behavior. We're not going to be too concerned about what it means to be intelligent. We're going to have a definition, and we'll talk, like I said, we'll talk about that on Thursday, to give you some idea of what the goal is going to be. But once we have that definition down, then we are essentially going to treat this, as I mentioned, as a data structures and algorithms class. And the data structures in this case essentially means knowledge representation. So we'll be dealing with a particular kind of data structures for a particular purpose, and that is to somehow, in some form, represent knowledge. Okay? Once that knowledge has been represented, then what we're going to do is develop algorithms to manipulate that knowledge in such a way that the program looks like, at least, it's intelligent. Right? And that's the reasoning part. So here's where the knowledge and reasoning comes in, but the way that we're going to do that is just essentially by considering data structures and algorithms. Okay, and that's going to be my point of view for this class. So these are the two main objectives. This is going to be the main techniques and the principles that are driving the course. All right. A more general objective is to sort of take a step back and look at what we're doing, and I'll do this on occasion as we go through the various sections through the semester, and understand the principles behind what it is we are doing. Why are we using a particular data structure like a decision tree? Okay, what's the point there? What are we trying to exploit? And this is sort of where we're diverging with artificial intelligence, right? If this was a artificially intelligent class, we would sort of heavily lean on the motivations behind that. We're not going to do that. We're just going to be interested in what's the principles? What are we embodying by using, for example, a decision tree or a knowledge base? And the reason we're going to do that is because not only does that help make programs smart, but it also can help make you smart. Because one of the principles that we're going to be talking about is, to spoil things for the next lecture, intelligence essentially means acting like an expert. Okay, if your program acts like an expert in a particular domain, we'll consider it to be an intelligent program. Okay? And the question is, what are the principles that make you act like an expert? Is there anything that you can learn from a program that acts like an expert that you can apply to yourself? And from my point of view, the answer is yeah. There are principles that you can use that you can adopt for yourself, even though you're not a program, let's assume, and essentially do something that will increase or amplify your intelligence. Perhaps not intelligent. Let me say abilities. All right. But this is sort of a more general objective. It's something that I'll occasionally point out when it's easy to do. The principal objectives here are to figure out what these techniques are, neural networks, genetic programming, stuff like that, and what's behind them. What are the data structures? What are the algorithms that are in play? All right, so that's the objectives. Any questions about that? I prefer to have dialogues as opposed to monologues. So if anybody has any questions, don't hesitate to speak up. And who am I? I am your instructor for this class. My name is Richard Clayton. You can call me Rich. I do not need to hear doctor or professor or mister or sir. On the other hand, if you feel more comfortable using titles, go right ahead. The office hours for this class are from 6 to 7 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm usually here maybe 5 o'clock or so. So if you want to see me, you can come around at that time. You can also meet after class, but that's 9:15, and I'd really like to, and I'm sure all you too would like to be out of here as quickly as possible. But, if you have to meet, you have to meet. Depending upon whether or not there is anybody in this class before us, then I may actually be in this room if it's available from like 6 to set to the start of class or 6:30 to the start of class. But I'll have to figure that out and I'll let you know. And my office is the adjunct's office in computer science and software engineering, which is right next to Trisha's office, 216. It's the one with all the stars on the door. Okay, let's get to the good stuff. Grading. Now, this course is going to be different from any other course I've taught for reasons that you'll see. And the first reason is pretty much has to do with grading and the source of the grades. So there are essentially two grade sources in this class. You will get grades from two places. One positive, the other negative. Okay? There are no other grade sources than what I'm going to be telling you about. So there are going to be no homework assignments here except for the readings and the programming assignments. No other assignments. There are going to be no tests. This is the first class I've ever taught without a test. No tests. There are going to be no reports. You don't write a report for anything. You don't give presentations, although I was expecting a much bigger class. But no presentation. So you don't, I mean, there are essentially just two things that you do in this class to get grades. And that's it. Boom. And one of them is not a test. Almost. There is one possibility, which we'll talk about. All right, so these two sources of grades in this class are programming assignments, which is the positive source of grades. This will give you points if you do them successfully. And mud cards, which is the negative source of grades. This will take away points if you don't do them correctly. Okay, so the programming assignments, there are going to be 6 programming assignments in this class. This is essentially your task. Read the book, write the programs. That's it. That's all you have to do. There are 6 assignments, 1 for each section, so you'll have 2 weeks to do these, starting from the second section. So there is no programming assignment for the first section. I was actually going to give you one, but then I decided against it. So you'll have 6 programming assignments, and I'll talk a little bit more about them here in this lecture, and then I'll have a lot more to say about them in the second section when your first programming assignment is out. Okay, and then when we look at the schedule later on, we'll also see what those are. So that's the positive, right? You do the programming assignments and you accrue points. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next, when we scroll down a little bit.
What language are you going
to use?
Java.
Yeah, unfortunately, Java. Well, we'll go into that. And then the other thing are mud cards. Does anybody know what mud cards are? Anybody heard of them? Mud cards were something that were developed at some point somewhere, and essentially that comes from the idea of muddy cards. And the idea was, and I used to do this a lot. In fact, I do this pretty much for every class I teach. I don't recognize any familiar faces, so I'm assuming nobody's had me before. Is that correct? Okay. So it stands for muddy cards, and the point is, what usually happens, the way I usually run it, is you listen to the lecture, and then at the end of the lecture, you fill out a card with a question, and it's a question about something that you didn't understand during the lecture. Okay, so if there was any point during the lecture that was muddy or unclear, you would write that down as a question and hand it in. Okay? And that's essentially what this is, except we're not going to do this for the lectures. We're going to do this for the readings. All right? So what you're going to do every time you walk into this class from now on is you are going to hand in a card, a piece of paper, or a 3x5 index card or something, with a single question related to your readings, okay, that which have been assigned, and we'll talk about those when we look at the schedule. Alright, and there's going to be, let's see, how many things are going to be on the card? First of all, your name. It's important because you need to get credit for this. Second is, for the first couple of cards, you want to write down your textbook. And we'll talk about this, too, in a couple of minutes. And then a question, a single question about whatever it was you were reading, okay? And then the fourth thing is a page number. or something. Something so I know what you were looking at when you asked the question. So it could be a page number, if there's some figure you don't understand, it's you could reference that, but just give me something so I can figure out what you're talking about. Alright? So you hand these things in. And again, this happens on every regularly scheduled class. So when you come into 209 on Thursday, you're going to hand in a mud card. And you need to do this in the first 15 minutes of class. Okay, and there's lots of other rules, we'll talk about those, but you need to hand them in personally. You can't give it to somebody else to hand in. And you can't do it via email. You have to do atoms. You have to give me a piece of paper with a question on it. You can't email it or fax it or anything like that. If you don't do this, all right, if you do this, you get no points, right? So 0 points for successfully doing this. If you don't do this, you lose a quarter of a point off your programming assignment, the associated programming assignment grade. All right, so you get a grade for your programming assignment, and then I subtract as many points as you lost by not handing in a mud card. Now, the point that you lose is 0.25 or a quarter of a point. Okay, so each section has 4 lectures, so that means you're going to hand in 4 mud cards, and if you don't, if you just blow them off completely, then you lose a point off your programming assignment grade. Not a big deal. Questions about that? So like I said, there are no tests. However, there may be pop quizzes. I haven't actually done pop quizzes in a while, but who knows? Maybe eventually I'll find something that's interesting, and we'll do pop quizzes. I'll talk about those in the next section. But otherwise, there are no tests. There's no midterm. There are no final in this class. All right, there are just programming assignments and mud cards. That's it. Pop quizzes occur spontaneously. If I see something, usually what happens, I'll read something that's kind of interesting, technically interesting, and I will turn it into a little quiz. And I will give that quiz within the first 5 minutes of class. Okay? Pop quiz grades essentially run from 0 to 5, inclusive at both ends, and are unappealable. We'll talk about what that means later on in the lecture. There is a page with pop quiz rules that gives you the full details. But this is essentially, you get some number of points that you can play with, and you can find out how to play with them by looking at the pop quiz rules. I am not going to go into more detail about the pop quiz because, like I said, I didn't give any last semester, and I probably didn't give any, in fact, last year at all. So, last academic year. But that's a possibility, so another reason to attend class and arrive early. The other interesting point here is the grade ranges. This is the grade ranges that I'm using in this class. You'll notice it goes from 0 to 45, not from 0 to 100. Okay. And you'll also notice that from a certain point of view, almost everything is passing. Now, of course, you're all graduate students, so anything less than a B is not really passing, right? But if you're an undergraduate, this looks really appealing because essentially the only way you can fail is to get less than 5 points. But it's essentially a pretty straightforward scale, not a real big deal. You just have to remember you're not going from 0 to 100, you're going from 0 to 45. All grades are kept with one digit of precision to the right of the decimal point, and 5 is rounded up. There's no curve in this class. Okay, so the grade that you get is essentially, because, as we'll see in a minute, the grade that you get on your programming assignments is 1/5 of your total final grade. Oh, wait a minute. Where is the final grade? Did I miss that? Oh, yes, I did. Sorry. So the final grade, where does the final grade come from? I apologize for that. Final grade is the straight unweighted average of the highest 5 programming assignment grades. Right? So you have to do, you're given 6 programming assignment grades, and you're allowed to get a 0 on 1 of them. Because the lowest grade is dropped. And that's it. That's where your final grade comes from. Okay, 5 programming assignment grades, and it's a straight unweighted average. So you add them all up and divide by 5. Or alternatively, take each of your programming assignment grades and divide it by 5, and then add all the pieces together. So 20% of each programming assignment grade contributes to your final grade. And that's it. You're done. You know what your grade is. And then, like I said, the grade ranges go from 0 to 45. So now we will talk about media for this class. The textbook for this class is Artificial Intelligence by Poole and Mackworth. Right. This is, you can buy this, but it's also online. And there's the link to it right there. So let's see, let's just click on that link and go over there. Just to show you I'm not joshing. Maybe. We're lucky. There it is. Okay, so you can go down and that sounds great, right? Wow, I don't have to buy the book. But this is the reason why you have to start doing mud cards on Thursday, because you already have the book, even if you don't have the book. Right? In operating systems, they probably will not have the book yet, so they don't get to do mud cards for the first section. Because you guys have the online book, you do. So it's not all roses there. There are a couple of thorns. So let's see, where is the actual book here? Well, I mean, we can look at this in greater detail when we go to the schedule. Now, there's essentially, as far as I can tell, two kinds of artificial intelligence or intelligent systems books. One are the really intense books, and then the others are kind of like the engineers and scientists books. And I really tried to have this course be organized around one of the science and scientists and engineers books, because they're a lot easier. Mackworth and Poole is actually kind of intense. But I couldn't do it. I didn't like the books that I had read over the winter break. So I just essentially went with the book that I believe that they're using in the other class. But it might be helpful to you to have more than one artificial intelligence book. Right? If you know somebody who has some, you might want to buy one. If you can pick one up cheap, you might want to do that. And I have a couple here that we can talk about at the end of this section in the second half of the lecture. This is also, as I said, a programming course, which means that you'll be writing lots of programs. And as I indicated, unfortunately, it's going to be in Java. So you really need to know your Java. We're going to be writing pretty sophisticated programs. Okay, and I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible, but I may not succeed in that. So you may want to have some Java books. It depends. If you have a really whizzy IDE, then perhaps it's connected up to the web and you don't need a book. But you should have some ability to quickly get your Java questions answered, because you do not want to get bogged down in Java problems. Right, you're going to be writing serious programs here, and if you're fiddling around trying to figure out how to do a for loop in Java, you're not going to be in good shape. Okay? That's important. So you should have something around that will help you learn this stuff. These are a couple of books that I recommend, but this one, the Core Java book, is good for learning the features of Java, right? Generics, for example. The nutshell books are good for quickly answering questions, like, what was the syntax of the for all statement, stuff like that. But, again, if you have a good IDE, you can probably pick that stuff up from the greater internet. The other possibility that we should consider, or I might consider, it's going to be certainly true in my case, is that we can use a language that is JVM-based, but is not necessarily Java. So does anybody have a language that's... does anybody know a language that's based on the JVM but isn't Java? Like Clojure? Or JSON? Or JRuby? Anything like that? Well, okay. There's a possibility that you might be able to do the assignments in those languages. But we'll have to see about that. I have to figure out how to do that. Email is going to be really important. It is how I like to communicate. I hate the telephone, so I usually do not answer the telephone. I'm not going to be on campus other than to be in class. Right? So that's going to be from, like I said, 5 to whatever, 9 or so. Well, 9:30, let's say, Monday through Thursday. Otherwise, I'm not going to be around. So email is the best way to get in touch. In addition, you are going to be submitting your programming assignments via email. I was working on something that would allow you to do it through the web, but I'm not really sure I want to release it just yet. I want to beat on it some more. But so email is going to be important. Make sure that you have your, and this is your Monmouth University email, not Gmail or anything like that. Make sure that works and you know how to use it, because it's going to be important. In addition to all that other stuff, I also have a hypermail archive that I maintain. And this is essentially an archive of all email questions that I get that are of general interest to the class. Right? So if someone asks me a question about the programming assignments, or they have a question about the readings, or anything like that, and they send me email, I will answer this particular message to that particular person, but then I will take the message, the question, and the answer and combine them and strip off all the identifying detail and send it out to the class mailing list. And I just realized that I don't know what the class mailing list address is, so I will send you all an email on the class mailing list, and then you will get the address for that. I have a little spider that sits on my mailbox, and when it sees these messages come in over the class mailing list, it stores them in a hypermail archive, so you can get them on the web. So these things will be archived on the web, and if you click on that, at the moment, there are no messages, so it's empty. But you can also get those messages on the hypermail archive. Now, this is only true for email messages that are of general interest to the class. Okay, if you send me email saying that, oh, I'm not going to be here because something, right? Now, other people may be interested in that, but that's not of general interest. So that sort of thing, you get a personal answer, and then that's it. Okay. Now, if you don't want me to do this, even if it's a general interest question, just say that please don't redistribute this, and I won't. Right. So, I mean, you have to rely on my discretion about this, or you can just say don't redistribute it. But if it's an obvious personal message, then it's not going to get rebroadcast to everybody. But if you explicitly say please don't redistribute this, then I won't, even if it could be of general interest. We are looking at the class homepage, and if you're reading it on paper, then you can get it from here, this really nice long URL, which is the typical MU URL. You can also get it at tinyurl.com, and here's a pattern, MUCS520S15H, right? Monmouth University, Computer Science, Class 520, Spring 15, and the homepage. Right, that's a quicker way to do it. And then, of course, once you go there, you bookmark it, and you're done. In addition, there's a schedule, which I guess I can show you briefly. We'll come back to it, like I said, in the second half of tonight's lecture. So there's the schedule. Right? And it also has a big, long, Monmouth-style URL, but you can also go to tinyurl.com, MUCS520S15S for schedule. In addition, you can go, and I don't know why it didn't show up, you can go to the archive. How can I go to the archive, would you suggest? Anybody want to exhibit some intelligent behavior and figure out how I would get to the archive, mail archive? MUCS520S15M, exactly. And I believe that's all. The homepage doesn't really change that much, so there's really no reason to look at it that often. On the other hand, the schedule changes pretty much every week. All right, so you probably want to bookmark that and visit it often. For example, it's where the programming assignments are going to be made available, okay, as well as other materials, as we'll see. Another thing that I am not doing that I usually do is I usually screencast my lectures. So you can go to Vimeo Actually, let me write that down, because there is a reason you might want to go there. So you can go to vimeo.com/rclayton. Right. And you will see screencasts. One of the things you'll see all the way at the end of the list of videos are a bunch of screencasts from the last time I taught this course. Right. Now, that's not a complete set because I was just starting out doing screencasting and I had no idea what I was doing, so I was screwing up left and right. So there aren't a lot of lectures, particularly towards the beginning of the semester. But they're there, so you can take a look at them if you want. What I'm going to be doing this semester is I'm going to be doing podcasting, which is essentially just audio. There's not going to be anything to look at. Okay? And those files, those podcasts, are going to be on the schedule. All right, so for example, this lecture is going to be eventually on the schedule. I hope it will be on there tomorrow. So you can download it and listen to it again. In addition, the reason I'm not doing screencasting here is I'm not doing slides. I'm not going to give you slides. If you look at my other classes, I usually have, you know, slides that I project and make them available to you. I'm not going to do that this semester. I'm going to do an experiment where I'm not going to give you my notes. All right, so if you want notes, you have to take them yourself. And I'll be working on the board, so none of this stuff. Although I will actually use this to present. We can look at pictures and things like that. So that's why there's no screencasting this semester, because there's essentially no screen. And that's it. I mean, that's pretty much it for this course. The rest of the stuff that we're going to be talking about is sort of the boilerplate you get for every class. Assistance, if you need assistance. Wait a minute. Oh, here we are. Sorry, a little too high. If you need assistance, then you should come and see me, because this essentially what you see here is what you're going to get for this class. If you understand what I'm talking about, you know what to do. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then it doesn't involve you. Attendance, well, this is actually kind of a dodge, right? I don't have an attendance policy. Right? You're graduate students, you're adults, you can figure out what to do. Now, of course, why is that a dodge? It's actually not a big dodge, but it's still a dodge. Why is that true? What have we talked about that sort of suggests that this isn't quite true? The mud cards. Right? If you don't turn in the mud cards, then you lose a quarter point off your grade. Right? But you have to turn in your mud cards personally within the first 15 minutes of class, which means you have to show up here to turn in your mud card. That's the only way you can turn it in. Okay. And what the heck, since you're here, you might as well stay. But if you just want to hand the card in and walk out the door, you can do that too. So that's why this is a little dodge, but, you know, that's how it goes. On the other hand, if you are not in class, I nevertheless hold you responsible for understanding everything it is that goes on in class. Okay? Now, again, that's not a real big deal, right? That's sort of another dodge. Why is that? What have we talked about that suggests that this is not a real big deal either? The podcast, exactly. Right, you could listen to the podcast. Now, there is a problem with that, though, just like with the mud cards. Essentially, the way I like to work the class is we have, let's assume 2 hours. It's a little bit less, 10 minutes less than that. So the first hour is a lecture. Essentially, I stand up here and go blah, blah, blah. Right. And then that's it. We're done. That part of the class is going to be podcast. Then we have the second hour, which is essentially more interactive, right? So in the first hour, the information is going from me to you. In the second hour, the information comes in the other direction. It goes from you to me. That is not going to be podcast, because it's a pain in the neck, right? Because people are talking. It's hard. So it's really a pain in the neck to deal with people who are talking in the room and so forth and so on. So that part is not going to be podcast, and you're going to miss out on that. We're actually going to talk a lot about the programming assignments there. So, again, even though you can listen to the podcast to get the lectures, it's the stuff in the second hour that is you're not going to get there. This doesn't really make any difference, right? Because you don't have any tests. There's no other reason to be here other than to either hand in the mud cards or just attend the lecture, right? Again, no tests, none of that stuff. So, you can just ignore this. Cheating, first of all, we have to figure out what I mean by cheating, and you can look at the student handbook, which I thought I had a link to that. But anyway, the student handbook tells you what cheating is. Essentially, what I consider cheating to be is when you give me some work, either a mud card or your programming assignment, my assumption is that this is your work. You did this work, okay? If that's not true, okay, then you've cheated. Right? If you present something as your work and it's not your work, then that's cheating. Okay? Now, one of the things about submitting your assignments via email or possibly via the web, if I can get that to work by the end of the semester, is everything's electronic. So what I can do is I can take your programs and send them off to the plagiarism detector at Stanford, okay, which I'm going to do. All right, so that's one of the ways that we can detect whether or not you're actually doing your own work. So that's what cheating is. Okay? It's essentially handing in your own work that you didn't actually do. Okay, so that's, and everything else I don't consider cheating, and that's important because when we talk about how you should approach this course, I'm going to give you some things which look an awful lot like cheating, but I don't consider them to be, so I encourage you to do that. Alright, so that's what cheating is. Now what happens if I suspect cheating has occurred? Let's assume that two people essentially, one person copied somebody else's programming assignment. Okay? Which actually will not be that easy to do, but if I can get things to work right. But let's assume that happens. So, you know, two programs come in, it gets detected as being really, really similar to one another, right? Beyond the grounds of just mere random, oh, it's the way we write programs, right? So essentially what I do is I give each of the programs a zero. Boom, that's it. I'm done, right? Now, it comes down to the cheaters to argue that, in fact, they did not cheat. And I was like, no, I did this work myself. I did everything myself, and I can show you that. So what you can do is I'll give you the chance to argue that you haven't cheated. But you're arguing from a position of a zero. And so you really need to actually present that argument, assuming, in fact, you didn't cheat. And then we go back and forth. And if you can successfully demonstrate that you, in fact, did the work, and that's actually turns out to be pretty easy to do, depending upon how you actually write programs. How many people here use a version control system or source code control system, like Git or Mercurial or RCS or CVS or Subversion? How many people do this? I see no one raising their hand. Is that correct? No one here knows how to use a version control system. I recommend that you learn really, really quick. Right? Because that's the easiest way to do it. You just repeatedly save your work and you have a history of having done the program, right? So you have like 17 versions of your program. That's an excellent way to demonstrate you did your own work. The thing that's suspicious is when you have only one version and boom, the program is fully formed, right? That is almost guaranteed to be an indication of cheating, right? Because these programs are going to be hard. You're not going to be able to write them in one shot. I'm not asking you to do bubble sort here. You're going to be writing sophisticated programs, and you're not going to be able to do it in one shot. So if you just use the normal version control and source code control, then you are golden, because you can just show me the history of your work, and then that's it, we're done. If you don't do this, now we got a problem, because now I'm claiming that you cheated, and you have to argue you didn't, but that's really hard, because you can't show me any history behind your work. But really, you should all learn how to do something. I don't care what you use. You can use Git, but don't use GitHub, right, because that's public. You can use Mercurial, whatever you want to use. I use Git, Mercurial, and RCS. RCS is pretty easy, but you have to be on a Unix or Linux-like system. I don't believe they have RCS on Microsoft systems. All right, so that's it for cheating. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is, one of the things I don't consider cheating is working together. In fact, I encourage you to work together. Like I said, these books are intense, all right? And so I recommend that you form study groups. I actually have not decided whether or not I'll have people work in groups on the programming assignments. That's a possibility. I would like to avoid that, because if that's true, I mean, if you're working in pairs on the programming assignments, that means the programming assignments are really hard. And I want to avoid that, despite what it may seem like as we go through the semester. All right, I'd like to have the programs be significant but reasonable to do for one person in 2 weeks. Maybe working hard, but still doable. If I can't do that, then it'll be, well, you can make pairs of, you know, you can work with somebody else and submit a program jointly. But, like I said, we'll have more information on that at the start of the second section when your first programming assignment will be out. The point, though, is work together. Even if you do one-person programming assignments, you can still work with somebody else to do the assignment. I have no problem with that. In fact, I encourage that. Okay? But what you have to be careful of is you need to make sure that, you know, there isn't this strange transfer of almost verbatim code from one person to another. So you need to work with somebody you can trust. Somebody who's just not going to take your programming assignment and submit it as their own, because you're going to end up with a zero. Even though you really didn't do anything wrong. Right? You were cheating, you did the work, but this person submitted your assignment as their assignment, and I say to myself, oh, these two assignments are the same. Right, so they both get a zero, because I don't know who's the cheater here. And now you've got to argue that, well, you know, I did everything. Here's the work I did. Right, so. But, again, the reason that you have this problem is because you work together with somebody who cheated, not because you worked together. I encourage you to work together. Form study groups. Okay, and, of course, you can form study groups with more than two people, although usually more than three people. It gets cumbersome to coordinate all of this. All right, so that's it about cheating. Any question about that? That's actually kind of important, particularly because you only have one source of grades in this class, so you need to get it right. It's not like you can blow off the programming assignments and do it on the tests, because there are none. So complaining about grades. So I recognize and encourage a student's sacred right to complain about their grade, because it's an important skill. Right? As you go through life, people are going to essentially underrate your talents. And what you have to do is fight against that. You have to say, no, you know, I'm smarter than that. I'm better than that. I'm more capable than that. So I encourage you, if I give you a grade you don't think you deserve, I encourage you to come to me and say, oh, I think I deserve a better grade. Now, this actually turns out to be more important with respect to the tests, right? Because programming assignments are kind of definitive, right? If you submit a program that doesn't compile, you fail. And there's not really a lot you can do to argue against that, right? No, your program didn't work. Didn't even compile. Right, if it fails tests, you didn't do this test right. Boom, there's 10 points off. Okay, so it's kind of hard to argue against a grade in a programming assignment. Now, there are like maybe 5 or 10 points there that are style points. Right, you should be able to write good code, not terrible. Well, I mean, you can't write terrible code because, again, the programs here are not going to be these trivial things that you had in 5.0, whatever it was, 1 or 2, or whatever. Or maybe you didn't need to take 5.01 or 2. But, you know, whatever you got in your introductory programming course, these are going to be significant programs, so you need to have your head about you. And the other thing, of course, is that, and I'm actually thinking about this, one of the ways I might do grading is, sort of have two levels of grades here. One is you have a base grade, which is like, you know, you pass all the tests and, oh, that's interesting. You pass all the tests and everything compiles and that's great. So that takes you up to like a 90 or whatever your grade might be. And then you have to get those last 10 points. And the way you're going to do that is have a contest. So, for example, one of the things you might do for your first programming assignment is write a tic-tac-toe game that plays intelligently. Right? And if you can do that, if everybody can do that, great, then you get 90 points. Now we need to figure out those last 10 points. So now we have a tournament. I run everybody's tic-tac-toe game against everybody else's tic-tac-toe game. And somebody comes out on top. They get the most points. And then second place, they get fewer points, but certainly they get less points than a leader. And then it goes down like that. And eventually you run out of points. And if you're at the bottom, you don't get any points at all. So I was thinking about doing that. That's actually kind of complicated. It's not clear how that would work. But that's a possibility. So again, keep that in mind. All right, so now complaining about the grades, there are essentially, and I'm not, like I said, I don't anticipate that we'll have a lot of this going on, but just in case we do for completeness, there are essentially two rules associated with complaining about the grades. Well, actually, one of them is important. The first one is the only complaint that matters is that something got marked wrong that was actually right. Okay, that's the only thing I'm really interested in arguing about. I really don't care about everything else that you can argue about. I don't care about your GPA. That's not of interest to me. I don't care. I don't care about your fellowships. I don't care about that. Not of interest. I don't care about your visa status. I don't care. Not interesting to me. I'm not interested in arguments that have anything to do with your visa status. Graduation. I don't care if you graduate. Not my problem. It's your problem. You want to graduate this semester? How many people are expected to graduate? A couple, right? That's your problem. I anticipate that you are going to deal with it. I don't care. Right? That's not an argument I'm interested in having. I will not give you a better grade on your assignment so you can pass and graduate. I don't care. All right? I need to make that really clear. The only thing I care about is that you write good programs. That's it. And this is principally has to do with tests, but it's also important. You have a period of time associated with when you can argue. And that period of time is the period of time to your next programming assignment, right? So you get a programming assignment on whenever it is. I don't know. We can take a look. So your first programming assignment will be out on the when? It'll probably be out on, let's see, Tuesday. So it'll be out like on the 2nd of February, and it's due on the 12th. Is that right? Sorry? Yeah, like that. All right? So that's your first programming assignment. And again, because everything is pretty much automatic, you should get a pretty quick turnaround on your grade. Right? You should get it within like a day or two. I want to look at all your programs, but I should be able to do that within a day or so. So you should get a quick turnaround. Right? At the same time, your second programming assignment is out, right? So as soon as you submit your first programming assignment on the 12th of February, let's say, then on the 13th of February, your second programming assignment's out, and you can get started on that, right? You have until the next due date, which I guess on the 12th would be the 26th of February, to argue about your first programming assignment. All right, so if there's something you believe I didn't do right on your first programming assignment, you have the second or the third section to argue about it. Okay? Once you go into the fourth section, you can no longer argue about your first program. It's done. Closed. Even if I was completely wrong, right? I just completely blew it and gave you a zero when you deserved 100. If you don't take care of it in that two-week period, then you can't take care of it at all. Very important. People, for some reason, people wait. And there's at least two things wrong with waiting. First of all, you forget. Right? You forget stuff that you wanted to talk about. So the longer you wait, the less quality your argument is. And the second thing is you just forget in general, right? You just say, oh, I'm going to argue this, and then you put it aside, and then that's it. You just completely escapes your head, and before you know it, 2 weeks are up, and you can't do anything. All right, so if you think there's something wrong, take care of it right away, because you don't have a lot of time. For the last programming assignment, you have until when the final exam would be. Okay, because, again, you have no more programming assignments, so what's the period there? The period there is essentially, well, of course, I'm assuming that most of you will not do the last programming assignment because you do have one blowaway programming assignment, which I assume will be the last one. But it's up to you to decide how you want to play that game. Any questions about complaining? I mean, again, Because this is largely going to, and there's really nothing you can say about the MUD cards, right? The MUD cards, you just hand them in or you don't. I'm not going to say, well, actually, it depends. I mean, I may have to start putting rules on the MUD cards too. I really don't want to see two identical questions, because that can't happen. So I don't want to start seeing that stuff, but I'm not going to do anything about those. Like I said, they are essentially negative grades. If you do them correctly, you get 0 points. If you don't do them correctly, you get negative points. Okay. Questions about this complaining part? Okay. Late assignments. The answer is don't. Don't do late assignments. Because you're going to be doing a program every 2 weeks. If you turn things in late, you're starting late on your next programming assignment. That you're just going to go into a hole that you're never going to come out of. Okay, that's the first problem. The second problem is huge points get whacked off. 10 points get whacked off every day that you're late. And I'm like nasty. I'm a jerk. Your programs are due at 11:45 p.m. Okay, so if you're late, what happens is, first of all, you have 15 minutes to get your program in early, or at least on time. Well, no. You have to 11:45 to get your programming assignment in. If you don't get it in by then, bang, you've lost 10 points. Okay? If you don't get it in by midnight, bang, you've lost 20 points. That's 20 points off your program grade. You are dead. If you get 100, you get an 80. Okay? And that's just not going to get you anywhere. Because again, you divide that by 5, put that in your final grade. Do not be late on programming assignments. Period. End of discussion. And that's it. That's it for the boilerplate part. Yes? Question? Okay. Here's some links. This is the... we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's a bunch of links you can look at. As you might expect, there's a lot of stuff on artificial intelligence on the web. And that's it. Are there any questions?